following is brought to you by the Shining Wizards Network, available on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboo, and at swn.shiningwizards.com.
Have you ever been that lonely guy standing in the corner of a bar, lacking the confidence to approach a beautiful woman or even defend yourself if needed? Well, this is the book for you. Bar Jitsu, the American Art of Bar Fighting, filled with tips, techniques, and stories aimed to help you become the barroom stud that you've always wanted to be. Pick up your copy of Bar Jitsu, the American Art of Bar Fighting, online or at a bookstore near you.
Pre-order Bar Jitsu, the American Art of Bar Fighting, now on Amazon through barjutsu.com. That's barjutsu.com. Also find them on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube.
This is the Starman from Pro Wrestling Syndicate, and you're listening to...
You're listening to Shining Wizards. Oh, man.
Gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to another exciting evening of the Shining Wizards Wrestling Podcast. I'm Matt.
I'm Tony.
And I'm the Mega Powers.
Why do I sound like shit on this microphone already?
Because you do sound.
We switched it all up.
I'm in the Eddie zone tonight because Eddie isn't here.
And he is going to miss one hell of a show. We've got a stacked lineup tonight. We're going to talk to WCW, WWF referee Billy Silverman. We're going to talk to the OVW heavyweight champion, Jameen Olenbensian.
Oh, no.
I love it.
I can't pronounce his name.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you even know how to pronounce his name?
No.
Well, this is going to be a hoot nanny, eh?
It's Jameen.
Tony, do you know how to pronounce it?
No, I think it's Jameen.
Jameen?
There's Jameen. A J there.
Jameen. Why don't you should punch up like somebody announcing him coming to the ring.
You know what? I watched the video of him calling out Kurt Angle before I left.
Yes.
My memory is just shot.
It's all the drugs. It's got to be the drugs.
And then we're going to do some wrestling talk.
And talk about wrestling? Did we do that already, or are we doing something else?
You guys
silly?
Still watch wrestling?
Yes, we do.
Yeah, Dave, we're not going through some weird midlife crisis like you are.
And this episode is brought to you by our new friends at Bar Jitsu. I hope you like the commercial. Go check them out, Bar Jitsu. That's barjutsu.com. Buy the book, pre-orders on Amazon. It's the American Art of Bar Fighting. Those guys are doing a ping pong, Jesus. What do they call that? Beer pong tournament. I don't know if you got the information about it.
It's what the kids are playing these days.
I don't have it in front of me.
Dude, they have a championship belt they made. They have tag team belts. Like, they take that shit serious, man.
Are, like, these real belts, or are they, like, they cardboard
are real.
And tinfoil?
The world champion bar jitsu championship is a Dave Millican.
Wow.
Think about that.
Think about it.
Yes.
You can also hear us on cweradio.com.
Clutch and wiggle, baby.
Clutch and wiggle, folks. And, of course, swn.shiningwizards.com.
Be a mark by the shirt.
For all your wonderful Shining Wizard Network shows, including
Apex Radio and our friend Wolfman Jack Foley with Forearms and Funk.
I was actually going to segue to our buddy over there.
Oh, Mega Powers.
Another guest of the show and a member of the Shining Wizards Network. David Mega Powers.
Dave has the distinction of being the first guest ever on the Shining Wizards podcast.
And currently the last guest.
Yes.
Was he really the first guest?
Yeah.
If you go to our guest page, it shows Dave Mega Powers with the great power Udi.
Yeah, but what? I don't think he was our first guest.
I was the first.
Yes, indeedy.
In studio?
Oh, yes, indeedy.
With Mangway?
No, he was here before Mangway.
He was here before Garifo.
Oh, no shit.
Garifo ain't got shit on me.
What do you say to that, Matt?
Alrighty. We have a wonderful new toy, soundboard.
So better out of my CD playing, you cocksucker.
Which Tony doesn't know how to use appropriately. If he had left the alrighty where it was, it would have been fine.
I know you never miss lunch.
I feel like for you to be in charge of that, it's terrible.
No, it's not.
Your timing is off. No, what are you doing? See,
it's time for a gay moment in wrestling history.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No.
I like that song. Keep playing it.
No, oh, stop. Shit.
Don't play any of this stuff. Stop.
I love this shit.
Just stop. I will restart this whole intro. Just
what is
stop.
This, a video game?
What is
you
wrong with you?
This?
It's the tugboat toot.
It's not necessary. It doesn't fit in properly.
Wait, Dave. Tell
who
me
the,
now.
Wait, who are you the authority
tell me how great right. this sounds.
You know, I
how
agree
awesome
with you.
Is that?
I agree with you, Tony.
Yes, but see, he doesn't just have a toot toot. There's a whole bunch after it.
Well, what's wrong with that?
If you could just isolate the toot toot, that'd be fantastic.
Listen, I just got the damn thing an hour ago, so give me some time. Cut me some slack. Give me some credit, for Christ's sake.
Let the boy enjoy his toy.
Yeah. I think it's fantastic.
That
I think
is awesome.
Great.
Can we isolate that?
Yeah.
I'm going to use that as a soundbite.
Do it.
Look, I think it's great.
I don't care.
I think it's a fantastic idea. You being in charge of it during the recording of a show, awful.
No, it's not. It's
yes, because you're just gonna keep fucking playing sound bites over us talking, and it's gonna sound like a shitty episode of the Nerd Herders.
What?
It is.
Wow, he's awful.
I'm not awful. It's the fucking truth. We get complaints. The show doesn't have a format. Then we do it with a format for like 3 weeks, and then you're a fucking train wreck.
Who complains the show doesn't have a format?
Don't worry about who complains and who doesn't complain.
Oh, here we go. It's all Lopez's fault. Dave?
No, I haven't even talked to Lopez.
Lopez who?
Oh,
there you
shit.
Go. You broke GarageBand. I hope you're happy.
I broke the monitors again.
Why does that keep happening?
Probably because we're too high in the mix. I don't know. It just sounds like we're so quiet all the time.
Yeah, but when you play it back and listen to the episodes...
Well, you don't got that loudmouth Eddie over here today.
Alrighty. See, that would have been a perfect alrighty spot.
Well, you were late on that. Yeah, no Eddie, no Kevin tonight.
Yeah.
They are missing
How often
out.
Do you have all the guys? In the
we had us once in the past 3 months. Oh,
wow.
Twice in the past 3 months.
You guys are awful.
We're the best. That's why we have a network. We rule the roost.
Phil, I don't know what to say about that.
Your co-host, Mr. Phil Ray, almost shit his pants when he saw your little Facebook message about you questioning why you spend so much time watching wrestling and investing emotion in it.
Yeah.
He thought it was fucking down the drain for the turnbuckle throwbacks.
What did I miss? What did I miss?
Dave is going through like a midlife crisis. He did his DDP
crisis.
I had 4 cups of coffee without eating anything for hours.
No, here's the thing about Dave. Dave has made no bones about how much he hates the current product. That's his MO.
But I was watching Top of the Super Juniors 93 when I came to this realization.
There you go.
That's terrible. I bet you Top of the Super Juniors is a fantastic event.
Well,
yeah.
It's great. It's really great. It was clipped. Maybe that was why I was kind of feeling like that. I've actually been watching Best of the Super Juniors 20 recently. I've been enjoying that.
I hear
you
they
see?
Like them.
But you know, I'm the wild card.
Yeah, but you're also on a show called Turnbuckle Throwbacks. It's not called Turnbuckle What Happened on Raw. Am I wrong?
He's not questioning the current product. He's questioning
everything.
His love for wrestling. Why does he invest time and emotion and effort?
But not just him. Everybody.
Wait, no, you question you? Why Phil does?
No, he questions why he does. Jesus fucking Christ.
What is this, the philosophical throwbacks tonight?
It is.
There's our episode title.
No.
Wait, Matt, you don't agree with that?
As he takes.
If you have
it took
ready,
you long enough.
If you have it ready
up.
To go.
But you're sitting in my seat tonight, and I'm in Eddie's seat. Well,
that's because you're supposed to be watching your child, but you're letting a video game
Are
do
the
that.
Ninja Turtles still moving around?
Yeah.
Okay.
And your kid still sucks at this game.
Well, thanks, dude. You pick on Lopez's kids. Now you pick on my kid.
You know, that kid was giving me the shifty eye upstairs. You better tell him to watch his back.
Really, Dave?
Yeah. Oh, shit.
How many kids can you fit in that body bag you have?
Enough.
He could fit 3 Asian women.
Before we go any further into this episode, I do have a Twitter shout-out to give.
Yes.
To
Wait, should I play music?
Do you want? Yeah, go ahead. All right. This is a Twitter shout-out to one of our fans who happens to be overseas, which is quite exciting.
That means he's over cocks. He likes big dicks.
Mm. Mm.
All right, I'll give you that. Was a good one. I'm going to pronounce it wrong.
Yamin?
I think it's Neil.
Neil?
Niall. N-I-A-L-L Riley. At N Riley on Twitter. Follow him. He's from Ireland, I believe.
Oi!
He's a huge fan of the podcast.
Does he know the Fallen Angels?
I don't know, but it's still fucking weird.
That, so that's what they're asking.
We got fans all over the place. It's nice to see Ireland's on the map now.
It's just weird to me.
Well, it's good to hear that they got the internet over there, so.
So he's going to mark out to his shout out. And we appreciate your support. Continue listening to this train wreck of a podcast.
Shut up. This show rules. Fuck you.
Tell your friends. Tell your family.
That's right. Leave a review on iTunes. Buy a t-shirt.
Yes.
Bob Shaw did.
Support the show. A lot of people bought shirts. We just shipped another one out today.
Great.
Yes.
Man, I don't even need to buy some Turnbuckle Throwback shirts.
I already did. Whenever Phil's going to get them out in my fucking hand.
Kenny.
I also am waiting on my Drew Gulak shirt. So once he gets back from his fucking travels around the world, hopefully I get that soon.
Can good old Sausage Fingers stop crying about the fucking Extreme Rising money he never got back? Use that 50. And get some fucking color in those t-shirts, Phil. Come on, son.
Yeah, suck some dick. Do something.
Our shirts don't have color.
Our t-shirts?
Our shirts are white print or a different color.
Wait
print.
A second. You know, a Turnbuckle Throwbacks shirt has to be black and white.
Why? I think it should just be the Turnbuckle, and not like the post and all that stuff.
It's because it's old.
Yeah. There wasn't any color back then.
Back when? In the 80s?
Yes.
Back in the day.
What is the day?
Have you ever seen the shirts that Vern Gagne was selling in the 80s? They were like white Hanes t-shirts right out of the package with a picture of fucking the Crusher on them.
And they were awesome.
Yeah, but they were so shitsville.
Yeah, but let's get some color, Phil.
And I bet
Come
those
on.
Things are going for a good
Listen,
chunk of change.
Listen, with
now.
You and Dave in the room, we should not be talking about anything having to do with color.
What is that supposed to mean?
You should have really loaded up the soundboard.
I told you, I just got the thing.
All right, well, don't fucking use it all up tonight.
God. All right, well, there's not much on it. If I use it up all tonight, I can add 3 million new things for tomorrow.
Boy, how many sound clips can you put on there?
A lot. That's well, speaking exciting. Of sound clips, we're going to call Billy Silverman, so stay on
what
line.
What are we going to call him?
All right, guys, we'll be right back. Enjoy this commercial for the Neckbreaker Podcast.
Finish this episode of The Shining Wizards. Get off that $12 whore you just tore apart and check out Neckbreaker, the only podcast on professional wrestling and heavy metal music. Wrestling headlines, metal news, and guest interviews while your hosts get completely shit-faced. New episodes premiere every 2 weeks on Neckbreaker.net. Or follow their lousy updates on Twitter and Facebook at NB Podcast. Just like Ziggler at the Garden, this ad is over.
Ladies and gentlemen, on the Shining Wizards Hotline, we are joined by a staple in the world of professional wrestling. You cannot have a wrestling match without him. He is the one and only Billy Silverman, former WCW and WWF referee. How are you tonight, Billy?
Great. Thanks for asking. How are you folks out there?
We're great. How are you doing over there?
Good.
Are you, I'm guessing you're located in the New England area. I can tell you have a little accent.
I am. I'm in Maine.
Are you watching the Sox?
Actually, not tonight. I'm not. I actually just pulled into my house, so I haven't had a chance to put the TV on yet.
Oh, well, they were winning 1-0 when we got to studio, so.
Nice.
So outside of just pulling into the house, how are things for Billy Silverman?
Busy. I'm involved in a lot of different business things. I own some real estate. I manage some properties. And so I've got a lot going on. I'm actually getting ready to do some stuff, I think, in the entertainment industry, perhaps starting an entertainment company or a booking service of some kind.
Wow, sounds like you got a lot going on. Seems like you're a long ways away from the world of professional wrestling.
No, not really. I mean, some of it will probably entail booking, you know, some conventions with wrestlers or maybe some shows. I'm not really sure where it's all going to lead. I'm just going to kind of see where it all goes right now. So kind of related, and might not be, but it might very well be.
Yeah, good for you. Now, speaking of the world of professional wrestling, as a young man growing up, were you a huge fan of wrestling, or did you just kind of happen to fall into it?
No, I was actually a big fan of it growing up. A friend of my dad's, Sam Michaels, was the promoter here in Maine for Vince McMahon Sr. I was always around it. My father worked for Sam, and I just always went to the matches. I was a big fan of, you know, Tony Garea, Cheap J Strongbow, Gorilla Monsoon, Ivan Putski, you know, a lot of the real old-time legends. So I've been a fan of the business for quite a while.
Now,
I'm still a fan of the business.
Oh, excellent. Did you have to go to a wrestling school to learn how to become a referee?
No, I didn't. I actually broke in with ICW, which is International Championship Wrestling, which was run by the Savoldis in the late 80s. And from there, I was mostly trained by a gentleman named Tommy Farnini, who was also a WWWF referee. So I had some good training there, and just I worked all over and worked with a lot of really incredible talent and really learned a lot just working. So a little bit of both, being trained and having some good opportunities to work with some really great performers.
Now, you started back in the early 90s, and then it took you quite a while before you could get your feet wet in the as they say, the big two, the WWF and WCW. How did that opportunity present itself to you?
Well, I actually had a chance to work for the Worldwide Wrestling Federation, or WWWF, in the beginning, because I've been working since 1984. So I had a chance to work with them. I did some house shows for them through, you know, my father's friend Sam, who had contacts with with the World Wrestling Federation at the time. So I really had a good opportunity, and then I worked independently. I worked all over. I mean, I worked on the East Coast. I worked on the West Coast. I worked in Ohio. I worked in Florida. I worked for all the major independent promotions pretty much throughout the United States, and then had the opportunity again then to go to work for what was still the WWF, and then went to WCW right after. I mean, literally right after. I was on TV on a tape show for WWF, and then was working live for WCW on the same night. And so I was actually on two shows in one night.
Now,
major promotion.
Being involved in both the WWF and WCW, going into WCW from WWF, could you tell there was a big difference in the way each company ran themselves?
Oh, very big difference, yeah. Basically, WCW was a television company that had wrestling, whereas the WWE is a wrestling company that has TV. And this, because WCW was just such a conglomerate with many different facets, AOL, you know, Turner Broadcasting, everything that was involved there, there was a lot of difference. Corporately, I think their structures were much different, a lot of different layers as far as corporate and things like that with WCW. And WWF, or WWE as it is now, Vince McMahon is very hands-on, and he's very much the decision-maker and involved in all that. So you don't really have somebody who owns the company with WCW that, you know, made the decision. So it was actually quite a bit different.
Now, you were with the WWF right at the boom of the Attitude Era. Could you see from your standpoint that things were changing and going in a completely different direction?
You mean from when they were in the Attitude Era or leading into the Attitude Era? I know that, you know, they were trying to get things going, in WWF, and, you know, they obviously had the competition from WCW. So they were really trying to, you know, they were trying to maintain, you know, something different and new and edgy. And again, with WCW being a Turner product and owned by Ted Turner and AOL and Time Warner, they had more stringent requirements or more stringent constrictions, I guess I would say, on what they could put on TV versus what the WWE was allowed to put on TV. So I think that made a big difference in the different products that, you know, WWE was willing to stretch, or I guess push the envelope, whereas WCW just wasn't in a position to do that.
Now, when you worked, excuse me, I'm sorry, when you worked in the WWF, it's been noted in other wrestlers' books, Mick Foley, for instance, that when he sat on color commentary, Vince was in his ear giving him directions. When you were in the ring as a referee, who was in your ear?
Well, obviously, you listen to a producer in the production truck. That would give you, you know, whatever cues that need to be, you know, times for TV or commercials or things like that. So, you know, as a referee, you never had Vince McMahon in your ear. You had, you know, producers or agents and things like that. So you never, I personally never dealt with Vince McMahon directly or, you know, had any, you know, communication with him through a headset or anything.
Did you have your own, like, traveling party? Did all the referees hang out together, or was it like a couple referees and a couple of the boys going from town to town?
It really all depended who was on the road at the time. I used to travel with Mickey J quite a bit, Nick Patrick. I traveled with a lot of different wrestlers, Booker T, Fit Finley, Ming. So it's really just was a real hodgepodge of, you know, depending on who was on, you know, on the road at the time or whatever that particular week happened to be, who was booked, was pretty much, you know, you just picked out who, you know, who you happened to be able to travel well with and kind of hooked up with them.
Did you have a favorite traveling partner?
I had several, to be very honest with you. I used to travel a great deal with Fit Finley and Al Green, who was the dog in WCW, Ming, one of my all-time favorites, Barb, Barbarian, Booker T. You know, there really was no, you know, everybody I traveled with, I was just very fortunate. They're all really great guys and great people, and so I had a real opportunity to just really travel with some really great people.
Do you have your share of interesting road stories?
Yeah, I'd say everybody has their share of interesting road stories. Absolutely.
Now you work WCW, and we've talked to a couple of WCW wrestlers in the past. We've spoken to Buff Bagwell, Scotty Riggs.
I know them both well. Scotty's a great guy. I still communicate with him. Buff's a great guy, too. I haven't really been in contact with him or had any haven't had any contact with him for quite a while, but he, you know, he's a good performer and he's a good guy, you know. So I, you know, on occasion I have a chance to speak to some of those guys.
Well, I only mentioned them because they both had very interesting Scott Steiner stories, and I wanted to know if you had any Scott Steiner stories. And they weren't anything crazy, like it was just like, you know, him pumping like 700 pounds and making it look like he was picking up a napkin, or him like going to a club and just kind of standing in the corner and bobbing his head. Scotty thought it was the funniest thing in the world that this huge jacked up guy was in a club in the corner by himself, just kind of bouncing
just
his head to the music.
Kind of doing his own thing that he can do. Yeah, no, I mean, I worked with Scott Steiner. I have nothing but the greatest respect for him. He's a great performer. He's a good guy. I know him personally. I've worked with him many times. Freakishly strong. I mean, I've seen him lift, you know, barbells in a gym that most people couldn't even consider lifting, let alone actually lifting them. So he's a very, very strong and powerful individual, that's for sure.
Now, you go over to WCW,
yeah,
and you're part of, I mean, the NWO is just hitting it big, and you're in a locker room full of superstars and legends. Not that you didn't have your fair share in WWF with Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels and Steve Austin, but, I mean, you're in WCW, Hogan, Savage, Luger, Sting. What was it like for you as a fan just to be there in that atmosphere?
It was incredible. I mean, you know, you're around some of the, I was around the biggest stars in the industry, Diesel or Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, Rick Steiner, Scott Steiner, Sting, Lex Luger, Ric Flair. You know, those guys are just incredible performers. And, you know, just to be around them, you know, Hulk Hogan, Diamond Dallas Page, The Giant, you know, they were just, you know, bigger than life personalities on most of them. And, you know, it was really, to be around it and experience was really an incredible experience, to be very honest with you.
Looking back on that time, did you understand what was going on, why you were there? Like, now looking back on it, the NWO boom and how big it was and the ratings were, how aware of that were you when you got to work every day? Was that something that was pounded into you guys?
No, absolutely. Because, I mean, we were competing with the WWE for ratings, you know, and obviously we all wanted to stay on top. So everybody, I think, you know, it was a real team effort in that everybody was aware, you know, of the stakes involved and the opportunities involved. So I think, you know, I think that people really took those opportunities and tried to make the most of them.
Now, a lot of people, maybe they're not aware of how much the referee actually has an impact on the match. Can you take us through just a normal match when you're a referee and kind of break down that fifth wall and kind of tell us how much you impact the match?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, a referee it takes three people to make a match. It takes a babyface, it takes a heel, and it takes a referee. And everybody, you know, everybody has a job in that ring to do. And anybody, you know, you really have to know what you're doing, and you really have to know the people you're working with and what's expected of you so that you can do a great job in that ring. And it's really... it was, like I said, it was just an incredible experience. And, you know, going in there, you know that you're just as important because, you know, anybody just can't get in a referee. Anybody just can't go in and do that job. It's not an easy job. I mean, a good example of it is that, maybe about 6 months ago to 6 to 8 months ago, WWE had a match on TV, which was CM Punk against John Cena. Now, CM Punk, obviously, his ability is, you know, above John Cena's wrestling ability, but both of them, and nobody remembers that CM Punk did the job, and he made John Cena look like $3 million, and he ended up leaving like $3 million, but the other person in that ring, Mike Chioda, did a great job, and it took three people to make that a five-star match. And Mike Chioda, the referee in that match, was just as much a part of making that a five-star match and making both of those performers look great as anybody else in the ring.
Yeah, and I don't think a lot of people realize that. If you go back and look at old NWA matches, especially anything involving the title and Ric Flair, Tommy Young is always the manager, or not the manager, excuse me.
Always the referee.
Always the referee. You know, and then as you go forth into the 80s, it was always Earl Hebner and David Hebner. Was there a specific referee that you tried to pattern yourself after? Is that such a thing that happens in the wrestling industry?
I don't know. I mean, there are refs that I think are really good, and I think we all kind of take from each other a little bit. You know, there are some things that I do well that, you know, somebody might want to use, or there's things that other people do well that, you know, I might want to use. So I think it's, you know, there are some parameters you definitely have to stay in, but, you know, I think we all just try to go out there and do the best job we can, and when we see something that another referee does that's, you know, impressive, or, you know, the way they did something, you know, I think we all kind of, you know, kind of feed off each other and use, you know, use some things, or, you know, somebody's got a skill or a, you know, something that they can do to show the other one how to do it. I don't think there's any one of us that wouldn't have, you know, helped the other out there. So I can't really say that, you know, there's anybody that I would really thought of, you know, as kind of, you know, somebody that I wanted to emulate in the business. I guess I think I really wanted to do my own thing, and hopefully I had my own style that worked and, you know, conducive to having great matches with great workers. So, you know, I think that, like I said, we all pretty much, you know, we have our different things that we do. Some, you know, we do better than others. And I just really think it's a matter of just, you know, going out there and doing your job and, you know, knowing what you need to do and, you know, knowing the people that you're working with always makes, you know, a good match, trusting, you know, you've got to be able to trust people in that ring. And so there's really, it's the referee is a very important job. It really is. And, there are some great refs out there. There really are. And, you know, Mike Chiodo is, to me, one of the best, if not the best referees out there working right now. Chad Pattern is a good worker that's currently working. Mickey Henson, who still works independently from time to time, is a great worker. Nick Patrick, who hasn't worked for, I haven't heard of him working, but he was always a great worker. So, there's, you know, Scotty Armstrong, he's a great, great referee. And I'm really glad to see that he's had the opportunities that he's had, you know, while he's been in the WWE.
Now, you mentioned before that you watched the current product, and from a wrestling fan standpoint, I feel like something they've done with referees in the current age, they've kind of taken the identity away from them. You don't really know the referees by name like you did back in the 80s and the 90s. Do you feel like that affects, I don't know if affects is the right word, do you feel like that has some kind of bearing on the wrestling business?
No, not at all. I mean, I think it's great to, you know, promote the referees because, again, I feel as a referee that I'm the third man in the ring, and my job, you know, is as important as the two people that you're working with, because they really, you know, they really need to trust you, and you really need to trust them. And it's just an opportunity to go in and, you know, work with some great talent. But I really think that, it's like I said, it's a really incredible, it's an incredible job. It really is. And, I'm not really crazy about them not promoting the referees, because I think that, you know, the refs are important and have an important job, and, you know, have their own personalities and have their own, you know, different things that they do. And, like I said, it really takes a good ref to go in there and be able to create a really great match with two guys. So I personally think they should promote the referees because, you know, they serve an important role within, you know, within the wrestling industry.
Now, I couldn't agree with you more. I think that's something that for me, I miss it. I miss that they enhance the referees and you know them by name. So when, you know, there's a slow count or a fast count, it takes me back to when I was a kid yelling at the TV, yelling at the Hebners.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely it does.
So you were with WCW till the end. And
yep. I was there till the very end. I did the last taping they had when the WWE came in and bought WCW. And I was there. I was there since 97, so I was there 6 or 7 years.
Now, did you see the writing on the wall? Did you realize that things were starting to go downhill for WCW? As I said, we've talked to past WCW wrestlers, and they said they had a feeling about it. There was always rumblings, but nobody really believed it until it happened.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess because I've always been involved in business and know how business works, and I was just in tune to that. I think that, you know, most of us, or a good part of us, saw the writing on the wall and saw what was coming, because there was a lot of stuff that was going on at the time. There was a lot of management turmoil, a lot of talent in and out constantly changing, different bookers constantly changing. So it was an interesting time, you know. It was a real interesting time to be there, and I think that most people knew that at some point something had to give, and we were starting to lose in the ratings, and they had just, their expenses were just over the top. They really were, and I think that's what really ultimately was the demise of the WCW.
Now, knowing that and being a businessman, did you have a backup plan? Or were you under the impression that you had signed a contract with WCW and that would carry over to WWF?
No, I kind of looked at it as an opportunity to see where my career would go and see what other things were out there. I have a 4-year degree in business. I'm actually considering going back to school to get my master's degree. So I've always, you know, had some other stuff going on. And you know, you know that you could be there for a long time, or you could be gone tomorrow. Which is just how the wrestling business is. So I kind of saved my money. I tried to save my money and make the right investments, and just always, you know, planned or knew that one day, you know what I mean, that those opportunities may not be there for me. So I need to look at other opportunities or make new opportunities.
Did you take time off between WCW closing and then you rejoining the WWF?
I did. We probably had 6 to 7 months off, and it was actually really great. At the time, my father, you know, had been diagnosed with cancer, terminal lung cancer. So it was, you know, for me, it was a tough time, and I got married at the same time. So there was a lot that was going on, and after being on the road for so long, because us as referees, we worked all the time. I mean, there were times when WCW was on fire, and I would work between 27 and 30 days a month. I mean, that's just how it was. And, you know, you were trying to make the money while it was there and while the opportunities were there for you. So I was ready for a little break. I mean, you know, you live out of a suitcase, you live in a hotel room, squished in rental cars and planes, trains, automobiles kind of thing, and it just kind of wears on you. So, you know, for me, it was a good break.
Now, you go back to the WWF. I mean, was there any separation in the locker room between the WCW guys and WWF guys?
Yeah, absolutely. There was, there just was a big separation. You know, when it all kind of went down and everybody went over, and you know, it was just there was some animosity there. I don't know why, because we're all in the same industry. But it was, you know, there are some people that think in the WWF that, you know, if you're there or if you've been there somehow, you know, and if you hadn't been there, I had been there. So, you know, but it was just, there was animosity. People were worried about losing their jobs. People were worried about getting a spot or not having a spot. You look at a guy like Chris Canyon, who was a really, really talented guy. A real talented performer. I don't think he had the right look or the right charisma for TV, but he was an incredible talent and should have actually been training people, should have been, you know, because he trained a lot of guys down at the power plant. He trained people for the movie, for the Ready to Rumble movie. He was a real talent. Like I said, I don't think he had the correct charisma, or I don't think he had the look that they were, you know, looking for or to promote. But he was, you know, a guy that just really didn't get a break there that really should have.
Now, you talk about catching breaks, and it seemed like things were going well for you in the WWE, and then you unfortunately had a constant problem with JBL. Can you tell us a little bit about that and why you just decided that it was time for you to move on and just get out?
Yeah, well, for many reasons. And again, I think, you know, my dad had just been diagnosed with terminal lung cancer, and I had just gotten married prior to that while I was off from WCW. So it was just, again, it was all part of that, you know, it was part of animosity. I had been there before. Again, that's one thing about this business is that, you know, everybody's worried about their job because there are so few jobs. And there's much more talent out there than there are jobs. And so I think, you know, people were worried, you know, for their own jobs. I think there was some professional jealousy going on. So, you know, just for me, it really just was the time. It was just the right time to take a break. It really was. You know, like I said, I had just gotten married. My father was diagnosed with terminal cancer. And I really wanted to be home with him for the end of his life. And I got to be. Had I been still there, I wouldn't have been probably able to be with him at the end of his, you know, the end of his life. So I'm very blessed about that. I'm very grateful for that. And I'm a Christian, and I believe that the Lord works in mysterious ways. And, you know, I've had many wonderful opportunities, many great things happen to me. I'm still having great things happen to me. And, You know, so I just don't look at it as a stumbling block. I don't even look back on it now as, you know, I just looked at it as something that happened, and I look at it as the Lord works in mysterious ways. I've been successful in business, and it's all been good for me. You know what I'm saying? I you know, at the time it may have seemed real like life changing, or it may have, you know, kind of, I don't know. I don't really know what to say about it anymore, because it's so far behind me. And I think that a lot of it was fueled by a lot of people. There was a lot of misinformation. There were a lot of lies told about what happened, what didn't happen, what I did, what other people did. You know, I know what the true story is, and I'm comfortable with that. And so I think for me, it just worked out the way it was maybe supposed to. You know, and I've had opportunities outside of the business. I've also still worked in the business. I go out to the Cauliflower Alley Club. I work for Vendetta Pro Wrestling out of California and out of Las Vegas. I do, you know, I help people with their TV and, you know, booking some guys. So I'm still very much involved in the business. I get booked for conventions and shows. I'm actually being honored next June by the New England Wrestling Hall of Fame, is inducting me into their Hall of Fame. So I'm still, you know, I'm still very much involved. I still very much, you know, understand the business, and you never know where I might end up. You never know where you might see me on TV again soon either. So you never know. But it's all water under the dam as far as I'm concerned. It's behind me. I don't really have any hard feelings towards the WWF or to JBL, nor do I really think that they harbor really any ill will towards me, or does JBL, you know, harbor any ill will towards me. So I think, you know, that it turned out the dirt sheet writers really created something that really wasn't as big of a deal as it was.
Well, that's something new.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, where they get some of their information, I mean, I've read some of the dirt sheets when I was in WCW, and they would write things that, you know, were supposedly happened in the locker room or, you know, in the back or whatever, and I'd be like, wait a minute, if that happened, I must have been, you know, I must have lost my mind that day, because things just didn't happen, or those, you know, and sometimes they did have things, you know, because obviously they have leads and sources, but there were just times that there was no scoop, or there was no story, and they created one like the media does.
It's understandable. I can believe that. Was there one outlandish story that you can recall that just was 100% fabricated, and you read it and you were just like, what the hell is going on here?
I'm trying to remember. I don't write this minute. I don't, you know, I mean, I just honestly don't remember a specific instance. I just remember thinking, you know, when I was reading these things, that I'm like, do I even work here? Because it wasn't, you know, what they were reporting just wasn't true, or who they said was backstage wasn't backstage, or, you know, what they thought was happening or going to happen or did happen didn't, you know, and or things that people said or places that people were supposed to be or weren't. And, you know, a lot of it's prefabrication so that they can make stories so that people will buy the dirt sheets, you know. And it's too bad, because by doing that, I really think they hurt the business. You know, they really create stories about people and situations that are so untrue and are so far from the truth, that it does, sometimes it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, I hear you. It's whatever makes the headlines, whatever gets the people to click on them, buy them, the whole nine yards.
Exactly. You know, like, God bless Sunny. I love her to death, Tamara Sitch. She plays the wrestling media like a fiddle, and I love it. You know what I'm saying? And they bite every time she puts something out there. They just bite and take it and run with it, when there's just no truth about it. You know, and again, it's too bad, because I just don't. I feel like these people are trying to destroy the business. They're not helping the business. You know, by creating rumors, false innuendos, and things that don't that just are not true about people.
Yeah, we had Tammy on the show about 2 weeks ago, and you know, heading into it, everybody was like, "She's full of it. She's gonna lie to you." And it was probably one of the best interviews we ever did. It was a riot. She was such a sweetheart.
She is. Tamara's a great girl. I know Sunny very well. I actually just saw her a while back at a convention I did, and we kind of caught up. We hadn't seen each other for a while, but I worked with her in the WWF when her and Chris Candido were doing the Bawdy Donna's gimmick. And she was just starting. Basically, when she got there, I was there as well, and she was just starting her role as Sunny. So I really got to see, you know, a lot of opportunities that she had, and I just got to know her. And then, of course, she came to WCW for a very short time when Vince Russo took over as the booker. And so I got to, you know, kind of reacquaint with her and Chris Candido, and I'd worked with Chris Candido out in the Indies many, many, many times. So, you know, I had a good familiarity with them, and I know Tammy, and Tammy's, you know, she's a good girl. She's had her share of hard luck, you know, times, and but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, she's a good girl, and, you know, I think that she, you know, she just tries to do what's best, and I think sometimes the media likes to, or the wrestling media really likes to feast on somebody's or a performer's maybe bad luck or, you know, missteps in life. We're all just human, you know. We're all, you know, we're characters in the ring and, you know, what you see on TV. But, you know, we're all regular people, too, outside of the business. You know, we have wives and husbands and children and families. And, you know, we suffer the same, you know, we have the same types of temptations and the same types of things that happen to us as anybody else. And I think people forget that because they think of the persona of Sunny or any performer that they've seen on a big scale and think, you know, how is that possible that they, you know, that they could have fallen on hard times? But, you know, it can happen to anybody. And, you know, that's why I say, by the grace of God, go I, because you just don't know. You know, one day you could be at the top of the mountain and the next day you could be off TV and nobody knows who you are. So it's, you know, it's really, and on top of being a performer and all the stuff that you have to do, the traveling, the interviews, the, you know, the scheduling and everything, you know, trying to, you know, live that life. And then, you know, again, trying to, you know, be married, you know, perhaps, or have children, or, you know, have family relationships or friend relationships. It's very difficult in the business. And that's why I think that a lot of people falter, because, you know, there are a lot of temptations on the road. And it definitely takes a strong person to go out on the road and be able to withstand those temptations. And, you know, many have fallen, and, you know, even good people have fallen. So it's not a matter of being weak. It's just a matter of, you know, how many temptations are put in front of you and how you're able to, you know, handle those situations.
Yeah, and she's done a great job of just getting back on that horse and dusting herself off and kind of putting everything behind her and moving forward. And we are.
You know, she had a rough year last year, a very rough year, and went through a lot of things, good, bad, and different. I think, you know, she was connected to some of the wrong people, which can happen because, again, there are people in the industry or that are around the industry that want to either get into the industry or want to use what you can do for them to better themselves or their career. And regardless of whether it's at your expense, they will still do that. And that's what I think happened to Tamara. I think Sunny just had the wrong people around her. I think she was involved with some of the wrong people. And I think that shows that, you know, hopefully she's, you know, she's gotten away from those people and, you know, she's, you know, working on getting her life back together and moving forward and doing some great things for herself.
And she seems to be on the right path, and we have her back and we support her 150%.
Absolutely. That's good to hear because she's a good girl, and, you know, she's worked hard in the business, and she's, you know, she's had the opportunity to do a lot, and she's been, you know, she's been to the big show, and so she, you know, she knows what it's all about. And You know, it's not always easy once you leave the business to just be able to leave and pick up your life again. And I think she struggles with that as well. And I think she's coming to grips with that. You can, you know, you can be outside of the business and just be Tamara Sitch and be okay with that and enjoy your life. And then when you have to go be Sunny, go be Sunny, you know, but there's got to be a divide there, and you've got to know where that divide lies.
Right.
I really hope that, you know, this year will bring good things for Tamara, and that, you know, she'll have some real great opportunities for herself now that she's away from, you know, certain influences that I think may not have been in her best interest.
I think she's doing the right thing, and I think things are going to be okay for her.
Absolutely.
So being a 20-year vet, 20-plus years, a referee, you've been in WWF, WCW, do you have a favorite match that you have refereed?
It's, you know, that's like the hardest answer in the world for me, because I have been so blessed to have the opportunity to work with some of the greatest performers. I've worked with Terry Funk and Ric Flair. I've worked with Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. I've worked with Scott Hall. I've worked with Scott Steiner. I've worked with Jushin Thunder Liger. That's an incredible experience. Chris Benoit, Dean Malenko, Eddie Guerrero. I mean, there's just so many that I've had the opportunity to work with that I really feel that I've had great matches or been involved in great matches with, that it would really just be an injustice to really say one particular match, because there really isn't one particular match. There are so many matches. I mean, I've worked with Sting, I've worked with Lex Luger, I've worked with Macho Man Randy Savage, I've worked with Diamond Dallas Page. I mean, I've just worked with so many incredible performers in that ring that, again, I just don't think I could ever do justice and say that there's one particular match that stands out, you know, for me as the most incredible match I ever did, because there were many incredible matches that I felt I did or was involved with.
Well, fair enough. We're going to have to give you homework and have you do like a top five and then have you come back on and tell us.
I'll have to scratch my head on that one, because there have been many. That's for sure.
Well, Billy, it has been a pleasure. You were the first referee to be a guest on the Shining Wizards podcast. And
nice.
Thank you very much.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to your listeners. And hopefully I've given them an opportunity into, you know, listening to a little bit about what it's like to be a referee and what goes on a little bit in the business and behind the curtain as a referee. And again, it's been my pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me on your show.
That was a pleasure. Is there a place the fans can find you if they want to reach out to you and just keep tabs on Billy Silverman?
Absolutely. I'm on Facebook. I have two Facebook pages, Billy Silverman on Facebook, or a fan page, Billy Silverman. Please feel free to, you know, hit me up, you know, send me a friend request. If you have any questions you want to ask, you know, I enjoy, you know, talking and interacting with the fans, because the fans are really what make the business successful. So, you know, if anybody's got a question they want to ask, or, you know, if there's any promoters out there that want to get in contact with me, or any, you know, buddy that's looking to book conventions or things like that, please feel free to contact me through Facebook.
Excellent. Billy, thank you again. It's been a pleasure.
And again, thank you so much for having me as a guest on your show tonight.
Thank you. Have a great night, and hopefully we talk to you in the future.
Please do. I'll look forward to it, my friend. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Billy. Have a great night.
Yep. Bye-bye.
This is Mike Norengartner, and before there was Facebook, before Blu-ray, and before cell phones, there was the last old-school generation. Join me and my co-host, Adam Henning, on The Midnight Jury as we take you on a trip back to the 80s and 90s. We debate pro wrestling, horror movies, and pop culture.
Dave's the worst.
WLW Studio South in Philadelphia. Let us transport you back to that last old-school generation and join our debate on The Midnight Jury. You can find us at facebook.com/WLW Studios, and we are available on iTunes, YouTube, and Stitcher Radio for the Shining Wizards Network at swn.shiningwizards.com.
Shining Wizards, the very own Midnight Jury from the Shining Wizards Network, having a little fun at the expense of Mike Norton, Dinger, Donger, Wolfganger.
I don't hate him. He's a good guy.
He's definitely a good guy. They had a lot of fun coming out for that Back to Rahway show that we all went to.
They really did.
And, except for me.
They've got some big guests coming up. I don't want to, you know, ruin it for them, but they're moving and shaking. They
got Superfly Jimmy Snuka coming on.
Okay, brother. They kind of remind me of us when we were first starting. Young
nice.
Whippersnappers.
The Mega Powers pulled an old school Bowman during an interview and didn't say a word.
Wow. did it feel like Pat Buck all over again?
No.
I was speechless. So.
No, our very first interview was Pat Buck.
No.
It was
Rhett Titus.
No.
I think you're wrong on that.
No.
I think you're wrong on that.
Yeah, I think Matt's right about this.
No, all right. Let me. Blah, 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 blah.
Let's go to shiningwizards.com and find out.
You know what? That's not a bad idea, Dave, since you're sitting at the second computer. Why don't you pull that up right there?
Well, don't let him touch anything.
No, I want him to. I want to see.
What do you mean not touch anything?
I want to see if.
What is that supposed to mean?
Don't touch it.
Is that going to go all the way back to one?
Dude, it goes all the way back to one.
Nice.
You know what I could do?
That was a good Brian McKnight song.
Wow, Dave, nice reference.
What? Yeah. Was that one?
Yeah. You're like a dream come true.
Oh, jeez. You're going to sing again?
You haven't
even had a
fall in love with you.
You haven't even had a Jack and Coke yet tonight.
And it's plain to see that you're the only one for me.
What a jackass.
Four repeat steps, one, two, three.
What
I'll make you fall in love with me.
Oh, Jesus.
Alrighty. See, Matt, that was good.
That was awesome.
That was good timing.
See, you guys don't need to talk about wrestling. You just need to talk about Brian McKnight.
All right, Dave Powers was the first guest from episode number 6.
So I was the first interview.
What episode number?
Anthony Lombardi was episode 7, the grandmaster of them all. Dennis Appleby was our first call-in guest, ripping it raw.
Oh.
Kevin Garifo was episode 12, Otunga Bunga. Pat Buck, 13. Pat Buck stopped here. Johnny Mangway, episode 14. Here comes Mangway. Rhett Titus, episode 19, Retribution.
Oh, really?
Yep, I told you.
Oh, my apologies to...
No, you're wrong.
Yes.
You read it wrong.
Eat a bag of dicks. Oh, you know what I forgot to put on the soundboard? Girls on Film, Wesley Willis fiasco. I wanted to play that for you guys.
You found it?
I have it on my computer upstairs.
Jesus is the Answer is his best song.
No, his best song is Alanis Morissette. You don't think?
And what about Rock and Roll McDonald's?
Rock and Roll Dude, I saw somebody had footage of him doing that at a live show. Oh, my God. Could he have been less enthusiastic about
singing
the song?
This is a documentary on Daily Motion.
Yes. I started watching it the other day. I forget what it's called.
Daddy of Rock and Roll?
No, I thought it was called something Joyride. Joyride, some shit like that.
Unless there's another one.
Why wouldn't there be more than one about the great Wesley Willis?
There has to be as many documentaries as he put out albums.
Alrighty.
So. See?
That works there.
Matt agrees.
Yes, of course he does.
All right, so feel like it's necessary. It's something that we just need to get out of the way.
Okay, this moment is brought to you by Serena Deeb.
Hey guys, this is Serena Deeb, and you are listening to Shining Wizards Podcast.
She's
thank you, Serena.
Voice.
She sounds so cute. Wouldn't you agree with that, Matt?
Alrighty.
I love this fucking thing.
You know what annoys me is that it's so unorganized.
What, the show?
Yes.
Oh, we need a format.
We do.
All right.
Yo, fuck formats.
All right, here's
we're taking over.
No, we're not taking it. Stop.
It's time for a gay moment in wrestling history.
No, it's not.
No, play that song again.
No, stop. I'll kick this thing off this table. I could care less.
I'll kick you in the dick.
No, you won't, because it'll be like...
I'll kick your dick out of your dick.
All right, so we're going to do a quick round of wrestling talk before we
talk about wrestling.
To call the OVW champion.
Yamin
Olivencia.
Yamo be there?
Yami?
Yeah.
Yamon.
Yamo be there.
All right, easy there, Bruce Springsteen.
It's Michael McDonald.
What a fool believes.
We can do fucking karaoke later.
He came from somewhere back in a long ago.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
If you could just take it down a little, but keep it in the background, we could do Michael McDonald while we talk Impact, because that'll take only about 60 seconds.
I wish I had Michael McDonald to play, but I got some good background music. Oh, Maestro.
Oh,
go ahead,
oh
Matt.
My God.
Wrestling news.
This will be your Impact review music. You might as well just title it that. Anyone watch Impact? I know you don't even watch regular wrestling.
I didn't watch it.
All right.
There's still wrestling on TV?
Yes. We'll just go through it really fast just because nobody cares. Austin Aries beat Jeff Hardy. Whoop-dee-doo. Fuck your boom.
Jeff Hardy still
Jeff
on TV?
Did Jeff Jarrett come back yet?
Jeff Jarrett showed up at FWE in Queens on Saturday.
Wait, Jeff Jarrett, the janitor of TNA?
The janitor?
Yeah, he was a janitor, right?
No.
Oh, he's King of the Mountain, isn't he?
Yeah, and he was the Mexican heavyweight champion.
Is he still?
I don't know. No, he lost that to somebody.
I think that the fucking Nathan's hot dog belt looks better than the fucking belt that he had from Mexico.
They might be one and the same.
I'm just saying.
Next thing you're going to tell me that he's still not married to Karen.
He is.
Karen!
Kurt Angle returned on Impact.
You mean Kurt Angel?
Whatever. Sting and Magnus beat up Bad Influence. And AJ Styles beat Bischoff and Nux in a handicap match.
Wait, Eric or Garrett?
Garrett.
Oh my god, is Kennedy still gone?
Yes.
Oh thank god.
I have
Hogan. Is Hogan gone?
No.
Oh.
He's fired.
Oh, come on.
Fired, but he's still with TNA, and it destroyed all those rumors of him coming back
to
the WWE.
You know, he just did that just to see. This way he could turn to Dixie and go, "Oh, let me get 40,000, brother."
I would like to read you my notes.
Five of your guys' paychecks.
I would like to read you my notes from Monday Night Raw.
Oh, God.
Notes.
I did take notes.
You know, last time I remember Matt doing this was when Rhiannon was Raw.
Yes, Rhiannon was Raw.
You guys sat there together. Yes, when are we doing that again? You want to bring format back?
I don't know. All right. Does Monday Night Raw get a different song?
Oh, you want a different song for Monday
Night
Raw?
Sure, why not?
Okay, here
we go. Play that other one. That other one was pretty good.
Is it long enough?
Wait, which one? Oh, Gay Moments?
No, that's not long
enough. No, it's only 10 seconds. Here we go. These are the only songs I have on here so far.
Okay, this will work. So Raw last night, a couple things. Shawn Michaels said HB Shizzle. I hope he gets HIV.
HIVizzle?
HIVizzle, because he sounded like a fucking asshat.
Well, what can I say about that?
And his undershirt looks like maybe he found Barry Windham's old stalker bag in the back.
Well, he's still wearing his he's wearing Barry Windham's stalker uniform. So.
Yeah. Yeah, he looked like he jacked that shit.
Yes,
so
jacked.
That was exciting.
Is this too loud?
A little bit. You could turn it down a little bit.
She played the Chinese food song. That's pretty good.
Yes.
I heard that today for the first time on O&M.
Very entertaining.
Oh. That was hilarious.
Or What Does Fox Say?
What does the fox say?
That's right.
Did you ever hear What Does E-Rock Say?
No.
Oh, God, they play an elephant at one point.
Nice.
It's hilarious. I'm sorry, continue.
No, don't worry about it. Did you watch Raw?
Yeah, bits and pieces, not the whole thing. I saw Tamina Snuka and Brie Bella actually had a pretty good match.
Oh, on Twitter I said, a Divas match. It's time to take a shit and jerk off.
How many retweets did you get?
A bunch.
You see, Scott Keith is following us.
Yes, I saw
that. He
doesn't
follow too many people. I feel blessed.
Well, maybe it was my commentary last night on the Twitter box.
Or maybe it was your commentary on our show.
Possibly.
You guys were
Scott Keith agrees with us.
A couple things I just want to note from Raw. The Los Matadores wrestled 3MD again.
Or 3MB.
Whatever. Again.
BM into PM.
Awful. The Midget Bull is hysterical, though.
Yeah, but it's grown old. Dude, Brodus Clay lasted for months. It was still entertaining. This is just not so.
Well, they're not doing anything with him. They're wrestling the same people every
week. Their finisher, that double Samoan drop, that's pretty fucking badass.
Yeah, but they're not Samoan.
I know, but still. So
what are they?
Oh, Matadors. Well,
they're actually Puerto Ricans playing Spanish people.
Huh.
I will forever refer to them as the Tito Santanas.
The Chico Santanas.
There you go. Sorry, Phil. Oh, you know, I didn't even apologize to Phil. I hope he doesn't feel butthurt that we have mega powers on tonight.
Well, I hope not.
Well, you know what? Phil's going to have to deal with it. Just like he's going to have to deal with the fact that he's never getting that $50 back.
From Extreme Rising, right.
He was actually sad that you weren't around on Saturday. I don't know if you listened to his opening with Stickman.
He was bribing me to stay on that day.
You should have. You missed a good time.
I know I missed a good time, but I have to take my Korean lessons.
Yeah, you missed creepy hallway time.
Creepy hallway time?
Yeah, we had to wait. We were waiting for Sonny.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah. Listen to the last episode. It's a hoot.
It's a humdinger.
It's a wing-ding of a thing.
So, I don't know if you how much you follow the WWE. NXT, the general manager, is JBL.
Hmm.
So, wow. Last night, they brought
up... What Billy Silverman has to say about that?
So, he's had, you know, he listened to the interview. So last night they bring up that Xavier Woods in NXT, who used to be Creed Consequences in TNA.
Oh, okay.
Started a petition to bring back the Big Show. This is their move to get Xavier Woods on the WWE roster. JBL goes, who is this guy? I've never heard of him. What kind of name is Xavier Woods? You're the fucking general manager of NXT, you dipshit.
Yeah,
you don't think anybody pays attention?
Honestly, what kind of name is Hoofentude?
Honestly, the average WWE fan doesn't know about
NXT. I think there's enough dirt sheets out there.
Yeah, but they don't cater to the dirt sheets. They cater to the fucking 10-year-old kids, dude.
I think there's enough.
Yes, Tony's kid.
There's not enough, dude.
Yes, I think there's enough people that watch wrestling that know.
If it doesn't happen on WWE television, it never happened.
There's a lot of people that watch NXT.
I understand.
And he got a lot of nerve to fucking question someone's name when his nickname was The Hawk when he came into the WWF.
Questioning someone's name.
Yeah. Wow. He's got a lot going on in this my gullet here.
Do we need more music?
No, because we're going to call Yamin in a minute.
Is he ready for us?
8:20, I told him.
Oh, okay.
That's 8:18.
So we'll wrap up our Raw review and then do that.
Go ahead.
Outside of that, they did a
Maybe
beat,
I like it raw.
A beat the clock thing with fucking Ryback and CM Punk.
Did they do a beat my meat thing with Ryback?
They might as well. The highlight of the night was the Rhodes against the Shield and the no DQ tag match, which I know you didn't catch because you went to bed early like a lady.
The rules were out the window.
They were. And the Big Show came through the crowd and laid a couple folks out, and the Rhodes won the tag titles, and it was actually a great match.
They went
match.
To the pay window.
Yes. You think they're going to overturn it?
No. I think they'll set up some kind of goofy rematch at Hell in a Cell.
Yeah, I'm surprised after all these years they don't use the replay option to reverse decisions. That shouldn't be happening.
I got some good background music now.
Yeah, but it's too late, because that's pretty much Raw in a nutshell.
That's
yeah.
Right. Well, then it's dance party time at the Shining Wizards.
Not just everybody get naked.
Oh, damn.
Don't be stuck up.
Texted me on Tuesday, on Wednesday, she tried to seduce me. She thirsty. She thirsty. She thirsty. She thirsty. No?
Yeah.
Grab the Gatorade bottle because she thirsty.
Thirsty for that dick.
Yes.
We need to make a phone call now there, podcastcancer.com.
We'll be back.
The recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
From the current to the way back, tune into Turnbuckle Throwbacks every week, exclusively on RadioInfluence.com, Buzzsprout.com, and on Stitcher.
Let's start it off this way. Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to the Shining Wizards podcast featuring Jamin Olivencia, featuring the biggest superstar that's rising right now, featuring the guy that has more emotion, more passion than anybody that's out there right now. And you know what? That's the truth. And you know what? That's real. That's damn real. Right, Kurt?
Oh, shit.
So that's what we have right now. We have Jamin Olivencia on the Shining Wizards podcast, and right now we're going to make history, guys, because today is the day. Right now is the moment to talk to me and for me to talk to you, and we're going to have a conversation. So what's up?
Not much. What's going on? You threw it out there nice and early, so we're just going to get to it. You threw down the challenge. You are the longest reigning OVW heavyweight champion, and you want Kurt Angle. If anyone doesn't know, go onto the YouTube, throw in Jamin's name, throw in Kurt Angle, throw in challenge. You'll find the video. Where did this come from?
Well, you know, I think this comes from a lot of things, and I'm gonna discuss that in the next few weeks. Obviously, Kurt is choosing to not take the challenge. He's doing exactly the opposite that I would ever expect out of an Olympic gold medalist, especially a multi-champion and all around the world. I mean, everywhere Kurt Angle has gone, he has won. And for him not to answer me yet surprises me. But at the same time, that's where you only get me going more. That's where I'm going to start talking a little bit more. And then Kurt's going to have no other choice but to answer me. And then he's going to have no other choice but to take my challenge. And then he's going to have no other choice but to lose. And that's what I am proposing, and that's what I need to do right now, and I'll explain why as time comes. But right now, that's what Kurt Angle needs to know. So that's where we can leave that for now.
Is there a particular reason why you targeted Kurt Angle with so many other superstars being on the TNA roster?
Well, you know, you got to look at the facts, guys. I mean, you know, Kurt Angle is the best of the best. I don't care who you are or where you're from, unless you're in this business or outside of this business, you need to know that Kurt Angle is the best. He really is. And I, you know what? At this point, guys, the bottom line is I'm the best. Right now, I am the best thing going on. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. I don't care who you are or where you're from. If you don't know me, you're going to get to know me, and you're going to really end up loving me. So it's that simple, you know, and I say that with all the confidence and respect, because that's what I am. I'm a man of respect as well. But I will say that right now I'm the hottest thing that's happening, and Kurt Angle, what better way to beat you?
So you're saying by the end of this interview, the three of us are going to have man crushes on you?
I already do. I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm boned up right now as we speak. So.
That's exactly what I'm saying, guys. You already have a man crush on me, because if you didn't, I wouldn't be on your show, right?
That's a good point. Fair enough. Fair enough.
Now, so, I have a question.
Go ahead, Mr. Powers.
Why do you think Kurt Angle's being such a big puss about all this? Why isn't he manning up?
I don't think he's being a big puss. You know, I really don't. I don't think that's who he is as a man. I don't think he's a big puss. I think he's just taking it lightly. And that's fine. That's the number one thing that I think everyone did with me at first, is they took me light. And they now ended up realizing, at this point, 10 years into my career, that I am a force. I am a force. And that's the truth. Whether you want to believe it or not, it's the truth.
Well, being
so So Kurt Angle right now is just taking me light, and that's fine. And that's completely fine. I'm a persistent guy. So, like I said, I'll be talking more, and Kurt's going to end up hearing more. And he's probably not going to like what I'm going to say, but at the same time, he's going to have to respect it. And you know what? I think he does, and I think he does appreciate right now that I am trying to reach out to him.
Very good. Now, you mentioned you're a 10-year vet. We're going to do this interview kind of in reverse. Let's go all the way back to the beginning. How did you get started in the wrestling business?
I got started, I guess you could say I got started when I was watching it at the age of 5. And I was just staring at it, and I knew right then and there I was going to do this stuff. And you know what? It's just been always a feeling inside of me. I've always been studying it since then. No joke, man. Like, I've always watched wrestling. But I started when I was 17, and I begged my mom to – there's a local wrestling school that opened up called Empire State Wrestling, which is still running today, and it's doing awesome. And I'm very happy for them, because it's a good group of guys, very positive people. That group is responsible for just the positive attitude that they brought to every show that we ran. You know, they did it once a month, but they were drawing, and I really believe it was because there was a passion there. There was a lot of positive energy going around, and they're a great place. So I started there when I was 17 and hung out there for about a year, went to Canada. Did some tours over there in Canada when I first went to England, did holiday camps. That was a wonderful experience. And this is all like in the age of 18 now, I believe. So then, I came back from England and I was like, well, I want to be in the big times. I want to be in the WWE, so where do I got to go? I got to go to OVW. So I went to OVW and that's where we're at now.
You made your TV debut in 2005, is that correct?
Yes, I believe it was 2005, yes.
Very good. Now, going from Empire City Wrestling to WWE and OVW. What was the transition like for you?
You know, it did. Well, you know, in OVW, I really got to learn the psychology of things. I got to understand the business on a far more deeper level than I think anybody realizes that you get from OVW. It's just, the system to this day is the same. It's the exact same, and it's great. But the transition was just slowing down and learning, you know, and I was so eager anyway. Everything that was being told to me, I was soaking it up, man. I was like, I was all over it. And I, you know, Rip Rogers, he trained me. I tell you what, man, that guy taught me everything I need to know, man. He's a genius. He really is. He is one crazy genius. But he is a very good man, and Rip Rogers, dude, I tell you what, that guy is something else, man. He really is. He's something else. But the transition was just a completely different game all around. Once I got an OVW and got a taste of, you know, WWE dark match here and there, got a little experience here and there, I remember just feeling inside of me, this is right. This makes sense. You know, there was never like, oh wow, I'm achieving my dream. There was never that. It was just like, this is exactly how it's supposed to be going. Okay, so keep walking forward, and that's how I just look at it. You know what I mean? So that's the transition.
Did you who was in the class with you? Any names that we might recognize?
Damn, man. Everyone, Dolph Ziggler, you know, Damian Sandow, Santino Marella. I mean, dude, the list, whatever. I mean, if you just take the talent, that, I mean, there was just a group of guys. There's tons of guys, man. Everybody you see on WWE today is pretty much OVW.
Okay.
You know? So you got some FCW guys and are, you know, from Orlando and stuff. Definitely a lot more coming up, and they're all awesome. They're all awesome, man. Everyone's doing awesome. So it's wonderful to see that too for your friends.
Now, if people aren't aware, OVW used to be the training school for WWE, and then it closed down and it reopened under the TNA banner. What did you do in between that? Was OVW still running shows?
Yeah, we were. Oh yeah, man. Oh, dude. Okay. Yeah. So for about a year, you know, without WWE, we ran strong. It was just us and the guy. It was just the guys who were non-contract. That's who it was. It was just us. Like we had nothing, man. And you know, OVW had to survive based off of us. So that was a unique challenge in itself. You know, because it's like, well, here's the ball. You know, here's a territory that's already, you know, it's got an infrastructure that's already built. You know, it's up to us to keep these people here. And what ended up happening in years' time, it started dwindling down. And I remember TV is just, you know, we were just suffering for a good 6-7 months. And then 2010, out of nowhere, we boomed, man. We were just packed every Wednesday. We run TV every week. So, you know, when you're running every week and you're packing out the building, you know, shit's on fire around here. So we started doing, I mean, in that time, and then 2011, I believe that's when TNA came with us, I believe. I don't even know. But they just came on to us. We were already doing good, you know. And but to be that experience, though, was such a great experience for us because it really forced us to really figure out how to, you know, do business and make it work. And it was, you know, and it's, I'm proud to be, you know, I'm proud to be a part of it. And everybody there works their asses off. And I tell you what, OVW is the most special place in the wrestling world. And anybody that came from OVW will tell you that.
It sounds like you learned a very valuable lesson in that year. You guys were kind of left alone on that island. Are you under contract with TNA? Because I know recently you were on SmackDown and you faced Ryback.
No, I'm not under contract with anybody right now.
So you're a free agent?
I'm a free agent.
And you're the OVW Heavyweight Champion?
And I am the OVW Heavyweight Champion.
Very interesting, sir, very interesting.
If Kurt Angle doesn't answer your challenge, what's the next step?
Well, I don't think that's the question. You know, I think I think the question is, when will he accept the challenge? When will he give him? And honestly, I'm going to leave it there. I think that's all I need to do right now. And like I said, I'll be releasing something soon. And Kurt will just hear more from me. So just stay tuned.
Sounds good to me.
Hmm.
So what do you do outside of the wrestling business? I know you work as a stunt performer. Did you kind of fall into that? No pun intended. Did you fall into that through wrestling, or was that something you were just looking to do as well?
Yeah, stunt performing, yeah, just kind of happened. It's kind of like one of those things, you meet somebody and they know somebody, so that's basically how I did that. And the same thing goes with theater. It was just, you know, someone came up to me and said, hey, you should try out for this play. It's about wrestling, you know. You should audition for it. I memorized the monologue, and, you know, I guess I did it exceptionally well. And I got the role, and then got to do it again in Dallas. It was called The Elaborate Entrance of Chad Deity. It was written by Christopher Diaz. It's an amazing play. I swear, it's the most amazing. It's a great write. If you guys ever get the opportunity, check it out. I swear to you, I swear by it. It's so good, so well written, and good story. And it was great to be a part of that. It's you know, that's the cool thing about wrestling, and on a deeper level, that's the cool thing about life is when you. Sometimes when you just go in the direction you want to go in, you'll find all these little things that come with it, and you do it, and it's just more experience under your belt, you know, and you're happy you did it, and it really makes the process of life pretty nice, so what the heck, right?
Yeah, why not? Go with the flow, right?
Well, dude, what the hell? That's what we're here for. Why else are we here? You know, we're here to freaking enjoy life, man. Enjoy it, get what the fuck you want to get, and that's it, and do it the best way possible. That's what I would say. So,
is there anybody you're working with right now in OVW that you think has it, that you think should be, you know, making it to the big show, you know, very soon, if not, you know, in the near future?
I see a gentleman by the name of Michael Hayes.
Like Michael the Freebird?
Like Bad Street USA?
His name is Michael Hayes. That's his real name.
Wow.
His name is Michael Hayes. He's a war vet, and he lost his leg in combat. And I don't want to tell too much of his story because it's not, you know, he could tell you it anyway. But he's an amazing human being. He busted his ass. He got into pro wrestling, and I'm telling you what, he's a very special guy, and he's on his way. He's on his way. So I see him doing something very big.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man. I single out Mike, but there's a list of guys in OVW, man, that are just they have something, you know. So I'd really pay attention because the magic is here. Trust us. Trust us. The magic is here, man. So you're gonna see a lot of guys come out of here soon.
Where you live these days? I mean, you don't have to give us like your street address or anything like that. I just want to get an idea of.
I'm gonna guess Louisville.
Okay, you're down and around the Louisville area. Or you're
yes,
actually.
Yeah, I live in Louisville.
What is there to do in Louisville aside from the OVW? What do you like to do down in Louisville? Let's put it that way.
Well, you know, man, I'm big on meditation. I'm big on being at peace, enjoying time with my daughter, any chance I get. My daughter is my number one priority. My daughter is my everything. She is my everything. I love my daughter. And whenever I get to spend time with her, it always reminds me of why I work so hard, you know? So she's a big part of my life. She's a big part of my life, and I couldn't do it without her. So that's what I'm doing, and I'm training my ass off, always training. I love to train. It's just something I like to do. And that's really it, man. I try to live a really peaceful life, and that's, you know, I like art. I'm an artist as well. I love to paint. I love to draw. You name it, I'll do it. So that's what I'm up to.
How old's your daughter? I mean, I don't want to sound creepy by asking you. I just want to get an idea. She's a young girl, or
You're such a creep, dude.
Shut up, dude. I'm going somewhere.
Can you at least preface it by saying that you also have a son?
I have a son. I don't also have a son because he has a daughter. My son is 5. Let me preface it for Matt to make him happy.
He wants to make an arranged marriage is what he's trying to say.
Hey, if my son is dating the daughter of the OVW heavyweight champion, that sounds like a win-win to me.
Guys. No chance. My daughter's royalty. She doesn't know. She's on the top already.
Well, my son's not a peasant.
Don't worry about it. I'll have to foresee that.
He's pretty good at the Ninja Turtles games.
No, he's not. Dave was making fun of him.
So what does the future hold for you, sir?
The future is bright right now, and I advise you guys to pay very close attention. I advise anybody that's listening to my voice right now to pay close attention. So enjoy it, because it's one hell of a ride with me. And right now, that's what I'm going to show you. I'm not going to say it. I'm going to also do it. So enjoy what you get from me, because it's a freaking ride.
That sounds like a plan. And if you guys want to see Jamin.
Jesus.
Oh, I'm such a retard.
He's not even drinking tonight.
I'm so sorry, Jamin. If you want to see him in action, you can go to ovwrestling.com. They do weekly shows that you can find on the website. He recently beat the piss out of somebody. He had some some very interesting war wounds that he posted pictures on Facebook. But he held the title. He retained. He is now the longest reigning OVW World Heavyweight Champion. And anytime you need to see Jamin, you can go to ovwrestling.com. And if you're in the Louisville area, like he said, they tape every week. So go out there, check him out, support him. Jamin, is there anything you'd like to leave our wonderful fans with before we let you go for the evening?
Yeah, man. Just whoever you touch in your life, make sure you're positive to them. And make sure you treat them with respect and compassion, because they're just as fucked up as you are. So
ain't that the
truth? Try to be peaceful with everyone and be good to others, because I really believe in that. And you know what? If you freaking just try it, you'll realize that life is freaking amazing. So go get it.
Where can the fans find you if they want to follow you? You have a Twitter, you have a Facebook. Plug away,
dude,
my friend.
I have a Twitter, and you know, I noticed you guys keep fucking it up, and that's okay.
Who?
You know,
us?
Like your friends were saying, one of you is maybe dumb or whatever. So I think here, I'm going to put it in idiot proof for everyone. Here it is. It's Jamin, J-A-M-I-N, and my last name is Olivencia, O-L-I-V, as in Victor, E-N-C-I-A. Jamin Olivencia. It's a nice song, isn't it? That's my name, Jamin Olivencia. At Twitter.
No, isn't it?
On Twitter.
At Jamin Olivencia.
On Facebook. Let's go all day long. I can freaking run my mouth. Come on. Who wants a piece of me now? Suckers. Anyway, guys. Peace out, man.
Thanks, Jamin.
Jamin, thank you, brother. Have a good one.
This is Too Cocky Kevin Matthews. I'm the former 3-time and soon to be 4-time and maybe even 5 and 6 and 7-time PWS Heavyweight Champion. Maybe I'll be the Suicidal 6-Way Champion. Maybe I'll be the Tag Team Champion. Maybe I'll hold all the belts at once. But right now, right this split second, every single person that's listening to my voice is also listening to the Shining Wizards podcast.
I like Jamin. Jamin's a cool guy.
He was. He rolled with the punches, even though I couldn't pronounce his name.
That's all right, dude. It's all good.
You rolled with the punches, Matt.
I try. He's got quite the task ahead of him if he's going to really...
I don't think Kurt Angle's going to answer the challenge.
I hope he answers the challenge.
I think he's a big puss.
Yeah, but you know what, man? Like, think about it from Kurt Angle's angle. Who's Jamin? Who is he?
He's the OVW champion.
Yeah, but who is Jamin compared to Kurt Angle? I mean, he said it himself, you know?
Yeah, but
Kurt Angle's been around the world. He's held belts in Japan and the two major promotions in the United States, as well as the WCW championship. And he was the first Eurocontinental champion as well.
Yeah, but...
Held all the belts at the same time in TNA.
It's not every day that somebody in the... little brother company, I guess you could say, is going out in the world of the internet and calling you out.
That's a great way to put it, the little brother company.
I guess that's what they are.
I think that JBL would get more respect and people would know more if they considered, you know, whatchamacallit, Florida Championship or NXT?
NXT.
Yeah, whatever they call it these days, as the little brother company of WWE instead of just a farm system.
It'd be really nice if they can put NXT on TV.
Yeah, yeah, it would.
You know, they own the show after all. They have some of their guys on that show.
Yeah, guys flip-flopping back and forth all the time.
So to acknowledge it once in a while wouldn't be too awful.
But I get what Matt says. I mean, just to play it off like it's dumb, like, you know, like just play dumb, like, what is this place?
Yeah.
Let me tell you what else annoys me.
Oh, boy.
They bring out the Los Matadors, and they are oleing, oleing, oleing.
Yes.
You had El Generico with the mask. You took him. You took off his mask. You made him Sami Zayn. Fine. But the ole, ole, ole gimmick was there. It was El Generico's.
And people even chant ole, ole, ole while Sami Zayn is being Sami Zayn.
Didn't they steal a bunch of gimmicks from those guys? Like, didn't they steal some shit from Daniel Bryan and give it to, like, ADR? Like I thought I remember something else getting stolen.
I don't know. It's just frustrating to see a tag team like the Los Matadors, and they're just getting over because they have a midget and everyone can chant ole, ole, ole.
It's the kids, man. It's the kids.
Yes, but El Generico, a dude in a mask who's a generic luchador, that's just a license to print money. Kids would be wearing El Generico masks everywhere.
Yes, but it's not a license for Vince McMahon to print money. He would have to license it from El Generico.
I'm sure he could come up with a deal.
Yeah, I understand. Look, but who was the last guy that came in to keep his name? Was it CM Punk? Yeah, and that was because Paul Heyman probably had to bend everybody over backwards to fucking get that. Seriously, didn't he fight for that? Could you imagine that CM Punk's name would have been like Sami Zayn?
There was Punk and I think MVP were the last two that got to keep their name.
Well, MVP also knew Paul Heyman too, didn't he? I thought he was
an ROH guy, so.
There you go. There you go.
And there you have it, folks.
So, a couple news and notes. Have you been following the low-key retirement?
I read something about it today. I had no idea that he was going to retire. What's the word?
Well, he wasn't going to retire. He's been retired, right? No, he was wrestling in Japan, and he got hurt, so he's been on the shelf. And when the company he was working for, I want to say it was All Japan, decided they were going to go back on their word to cover his medical expenses,
shit,
he decided he was going to retire.
You know, like no company in the United States would ever back out of paying somebody else's medical expenses. TNA.
I don't even think they really gave him an option to pay for his. There was never a "we'll pay for your medical expenses, Zema Ion," even though you have a tumor.
No, it wasn't Zema Ion. Who was the other one? Was it? Oh no, they guaranteed that the guy that broke his neck.
Oh, Jesse Sorensen.
Yes. Ooh. Yes.
Yeah. I think he went on to do like bodybuilding stuff.
Yeah. Kevin Matthews shit on that for like an hour. It was hilarious. Wow.
Is there anything, poor Kevin?
Well, the guy's trying to raise money because he was fucking hurt and out of wrestling to go into bodybuilding. He's like, how fucking hurt could you be that you're going into fucking bodybuilding?
Well, you're lifting weights.
He's like, you can't even let that shit cool down for a while.
Yeah.
You're not taking back bumps.
Whatever.
And pile drivers.
But still, yeah, but you're that like shit benching.
Is very, yeah, strenuous shit, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little tougher than inhale tension, but it's fucking strenuous.
Yeah.
Did you have you followed the alleged Michael P.S. Hayes suspension?
Wait, not Michael Hayes from Ohio Valley Wrestling.
No.
The vet?
Oh, wait, what happened with Michael Hayes? I can't remember it.
Apparently Rosa Menendez came back.
Yes, and he offered her a drink.
Yes. She came back from rehab. And Michael P.S. Hayes allegedly offered her a drink.
Allegedly.
So they sent him home.
Well, hey, you know, the best... When you're not drinking, the best thing you could do is have another drink.
Hasn't he always been an asshole behind the scenes?
I don't...
Didn't they cut off his ponytail because he was a dick on the plane ride from hell?
Maybe. I don't know if he's a dick. I just think that's him. He's Michael P.S. Hayes. He's just cracking fun.
Cracking fun.
Yeah, I'm sure back in like the 80s when like fucking I don't know, Jake Roberts was done with a fucking cocaine bender and he went through rehab and he came back. The first thing P.S. Hayes did was probably hit him in the fucking forehead with an eight ball from across the room.
Well, if you remember the first time he came back around when he went to the finals of King of the Ring, which launched Steve Austin's career, he had that feud with Jerry Lawler. And I think it was on his Pick Your Poison DVD, and he talked to Jerry Lawler. Instead of using fake alcohol, like fucking use the real thing, and he like poured it down his throat and everything.
Instead of using iced tea in a bottle of Jack, it was legit Jack.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question.
Fucking Lawler.
Sure.
Did Lawler ever have a fucking good match in the WWF?
Maybe with that 16-year-old, but...
Allegedly.
Did Bret Hart ever pull a good match out of him? I thought the Kiss My Foot match was pretty good, if I remember right.
I bet Lopez likes that match, too.
You know what? Memphis wrestling, the way Jerry Lawler wrestled, just didn't, I don't think, translated on a national scale.
But, like, his feud with Piper was fucking terrible. His feud with Jake was awful. Bret Hart was like, he had to bring in Isaac Yankum and fun of the family and William Shatner.
You know, Jerry,
hey, I like the William Shatner angle.
But Jerry Lawler on the mic in the WWE, I'm not sure about his, because he wasn't really a heel in Memphis. He was always the face. He was always the good guy.
He was a heel,
you know,
around there too.
Yeah, but not the way he was portrayed. Like, for a while, he was heel in Memphis. He was face in Memphis, but heel in WWE, which led to just like, it was always insulting shit. We've played his fucking promo against Goldust,
mm-hmm,
where he's calling him. Didn't he call him a fag?
Yes, he called him a fag.
I thought it was queer. Piper that called him a fag.
Who did?
Piper.
Piper also may have called him a fag.
I don't know. Piper called Adrian Adonis a fag. That I remember for sure.
No, but I think Piper called him a fag going into the backlot brawl, too.
He may have. He may have. But I digress. Sorry.
Yeah. You digress a lot, don't you?
Yeah, I don't, like, I never got Lawler. Like, he always just came across as, like, an asshole and not a genuine heel. Like, there's a difference when a guy says something and it's like, oh, that's fucking dirty. Whereas Lawler says it and you look at him and you're like, what are you fucking serious? You know? And to me, like, are you fucking serious just doesn't play well.
I don't know. He just, I can't even... Can't get behind
and
him.
Don't even start about his fucking obsession with puppies.
Ugh,
what a fucking
God.
Creepy old man he was for the better part of like 15 years.
Yeah, 50-year-old guy dating 20-year-olds.
Oh, and the cat. Ugh. I mean, somebody made a good point that they should have kept her on the roster if for no other reason, where she was like she was the true TNA. Like, she had no problem taking her shit off.
No.
None whatsoever. She might have been a good egg to keep around, but whatever.
And then when they fired her.
And he quit for a year.
And then she was banging somebody else in his house.
Oh, my God. Did you ever hear when he called Opie and Anthony when he was all fucking depressed? That when he quit and she left him? They made fun of him. And then Kevin Smith got on the phone and he made fun of him, too.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
It was
Christ.
Fucking hilarious.
I read that book. It's terrible.
What? It's Great to Be King Sometimes? Or
yeah, whatever it is. It's
apparently not
like,
that time.
You know, speaking of books, I got the Memphis book from Phil Rea. I haven't cracked it open yet, though.
Oh, it's great.
It's a good book.
Yeah. I got that. I got the book that Jim Cornette that I bought from him last week, or a week and a half ago now. Jesus, it's a long time.
That was last weekend, right?
Yeah. No, two weeks ago.
Two weekends ago.
Yeah.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Tempest Fugit, Oobie Oobie.
A couple Hulk Hogan notes,
brother.
He says he has.
Now you see, just for argument's sake, I should have had Real American on the thing because that would have been a great.
You should have. That would have been great.
All right, but it's a work in progress, bro. It's the first.
No, your music is great, Tony. Just
Dave's just egging me on. Go
so
ahead,
a couple,
especially that
10-second
one.
WWE related Hulk Hogan. Notes. He says he has one more good fight left in him if it's with the right guy.
Wow,
you
stammered
through
that
second.
Whole thing.
Didn't he have one last good one with Sting and that was horrible?
Sting.
It was rough.
Sting.
He didn't even do a move, right?
No. Him and I mean,
it's like punches.
Yeah, punchy, kicky, leg droppy.
He didn't leg drop.
He
couldn't
can't.
Leg drop.
If he leg drops, he'll break his asshole.
Yeah.
He'll have X-Pac-itis.
Yeah.
His freaking tailbone will poke through his rectum.
And then Triple H also said He would open the door back open. Ugh, God, I can't open even
the
speak.
Door back open.
He would,
as we talk about his rectum.
Rectum.
Triple H would open.
Near killed him.
Would welcome Hogan back with open arms if he ever got the itch.
Of course he would. And that's one thing about Triple H. He's been trying to get everybody back. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw the Warrior making an appearance.
Don't they have enough guys in WWE?
Not enough guys that draw money.
Yeah, that's the problem. That's the big problem. I mean, here's another rumor. I don't know if you heard this. You know John Cena's coming back for Hell in a Cell.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, it's all been a gimmick where they bullshitted about his injury, and they knew he was going to come back sooner to make it sound like he's fucking Super Cena, and he was able to train and overcome the odds and come back early from what should have been a devastating injury. You think they've been doing that for years, and we just never fucking thought about it?
Maybe.
I mean, it's possible. Look over years how many times guys have come back by surprise in the Royal Rumble. I had no idea they were coming back.
Yeah, but this isn't a, like, they, like, if they announced it, like, you know, ADR is taking on a mystery opponent at Hell in the Cell, and then they kind of...
But that's not going to sell anything.
If they dropped hints, you know, whatever.
Oh, like, what was it, the ultimate surprise, and then it was the Renegade, and then he killed himself?
Something like
hey,
that.
Hey, he didn't kill himself, like, on TV. It took a few years before it
might
happened.
Might as well have.
He beat Paul Orndorff.
He beat Arn Anderson for the belt, didn't he?
God.
He's a legend.
A legend in his own mind.
Jesus.
He's like worm food.
As it was splattered all over the floor.
Last night on Raw.
Sorry,
wait, was he a gun?
Did yeah.
Oh, wow.
He killed himself.
I know that.
Well, you can kill yourself a number of ways,
yeah,
man.
I don't know if he did the Hervé Villechaize way out or not.
How did Hervé Villechaize kill
himself?
Oh,
he fucking blew his little head off with a shotgun.
Shit.
Sitting against the fucking glass door to the back of his house while his fucking girlfriend was crying.
Oh, my God.
How's that for a creepy way to take your life?
I don't even know who that guy is.
Fucking Deplane tattoo.
Oh, yeah.
The man with the golden gun, even though he was like the servant of the man with the golden gun.
I need a little breather, Airplane. No.
No.
Oh, Jesus. I know Phil got that one. Sorry.
Phil's not here.
Shit, where's Eddie?
We were talking about the Renegade.
Maybe they're having butt sex.
Oh, fucking. No, I know where I was going with this. They did these promos last night with Cena. Like, he's been gone for like a year and a half. It fucking annoys the shit out of me.
I didn't see it, but I read about it.
Oh
God,
they're the worst. God damn it. I want to get punched in the dick.
Punch him in the dick. And I should have heckin' had that in the machine.
Terrible.
Tony, you're dropping.
He's been off TV for 3 months. 3 months to act like the guy hasn't been in the WWE for
2 years. Hey, that's
a
long time in the WWE.
Apparently it is. They can't do anything without him. I totally shit the bed on the fucking Daniel Bryan angle.
Yeah, you know what? Fucking to have the Rhodeses win the belts, why would they treat the Shield any differently than they treat Randy Orton if the Shield was what was good for business? I don't understand it. You know what I'm saying?
No.
Absolutely not.
Everything against Daniel Bryan was because it was good for business. They brought in the Shield. They brought in Randy Orton. They fucking said, fuck with us and you're going to pay for it. All of a sudden, the fucking Rhodeses are back and the fucking Shield winds up losing the tag belts. It's like everything's falling apart, but that should be Daniel Bryan to cast that first stone, to break the wall down, to have everybody else come in and fucking like, yeah, Daniel Bryan fucking did it so we all can do it. And now the Rhodeses win and Big Show gets his job back and... I think that Daniel Bryan should have been the first one to get over that wall, because now if he fucking beats Randy Orton, it's kind of meaningless because everybody else has already taken down part of the fucking corporate regime, fucking group, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, but he can't do it by himself. And like Big Show getting fired and doing what he did it because he was put in that position. And him coming out of the crowd last night, the only interesting thing that the WWE is doing right now, in my opinion, is the Rhodes involvement.
No, don't get me wrong. It's been great stuff. That match last night was fantastic.
Dustin can still go.
Fucking DDP Yoga, brothers.
Yeah.
Representing.
But I guess what you're trying to say is you want Daniel Bryan to be the Moses and lead the Exodus.
That's
for everybody else.
That's what should have happened. Yes. There were too many B stories and C stories going on that it took away from it. And honestly, this whole fucking Miz Bray Wyatt thing, like, I could see people getting sick of the fucking Matadors. I'm already fucking retching over this whole fucking Bray Wyatt family shit.
Yeah, a lot of people aren't very high on the Wyatt family.
I don't like it. I don't think he can work that great. He didn't impress me against Kane.
The Kane match was awful at SummerSlam.
But, like, I don't... I just... There's no fucking point behind it. I just don't get it. He's attacking The Miz for what reason?
Because The Miz has nothing to do. He's hurt, too. Bray Wyatt's hurt.
And the thing is... All right, I read about that, but he really isn't too much. He sits in a fucking rocking chair. But the killer thing is, the fucking Wyatt family had to fucking cost The Miz his match against the would-be WWE champion, Randy Orton. And in the meantime, Miz couldn't fucking buy a win for weeks. It just doesn't make sense. It's that 50-50 booking bullshit. It's creeping its way up to the world fucking title scene or the WWE title scene.
Well, what else is new?
I don't know. It's just so fucking convoluted now, and I had such high hopes for it over the past month or two.
You should just watch the old stuff like I do. And...
I know. Dave's
or Japan.
Right idea.
Just
go to Japan.
There you go.
Do they have more bathhouse matches? Like that IWA bathhouse? See, I would pay for that shit.
I haven't seen a bathhouse
match. I bought that tape just on the pretext of there being naked women in a bathhouse.
Okay, it wasn't really much, but there's a lot of potential there.
It wasn't. I was so disappointed.
It was A-Cup night at the Jiggly Room.
I think Scott Keith actually did a rant on that match. Like, it was at the tail end of some videotape that somebody sent him, and it was fucking hilarious.
It's a rough one.
What did he say about it?
Apparently the guys were sitting in the hot tubs, like the tag team partners, and they kept heating them up. So these guys were suffering in these hot water tubs.
Did they start cutting up some carrots and like vegetables and throwing it in there?
They started singing, "I'm gonna have dinner." better give me a lot of lumps.
I got a. I want to get through these last two notes, and then talk about whatever we want. Extreme Rising is returning,
which I'm kind of happy about that. To be
December 28th.
Ray is not.
Oh, Phil needs to get over his fucking $50. Send him an email, Phil.
Dude,
Jesus,
yeah, I know.
Christ.
$50 is a lot of fucking scratch to be out for nothing, dude. Excuse me. Yeah, sorry. Well,
they're returning to the ECW arena on the 28th of December. They also have a TV deal.
Yes, I read about that, too.
With who?
I don't know.
Sinclair.
Local Access? Or
someone in the South Philadelphia area,
if it's Local Access, that's exactly what they need. That's exactly what they need.
Yeah,
that
but if they're
awesome.
Trying... Full
circle.
You can't recreate...
No, but it'd be kind of cool, you know? Give it, like, that kind of, like, old school, like, grassroots kind of feel.
Yeah, but you're not going to get those guys that... You just can't do that hardcore style of wrestling and expect to get anywhere in the business anymore. You're just going to end up shortening your life.
I do. I agree with you there. I just want to see Shane succeed. I think, you know, when it comes down to it, we want to see everybody succeed, you know? Indie wrestling... You know, there's kind of been a resurgence around, you know, like there's been a feeling that, like, you know, WWE's starting to go back to the independents to look for talent again. And there are a lot of groups out there and there's a lot of great talent out there. And if it's another place, you know, that's successful for guys to ply their trade, I'm all for it, you know, because there's an awful lot of shit out there, too.
Oh, God, there is.
One of my favorites is Trash Bag Wrestlers on the Facebook.
It's unbelievable that people actually think that they look good in their gimmicks or whatever they're trying to do.
In their rip-off gimmicks and pants.
It's hilarious. I love when they post a picture of a girl and then it just turns into would you do her? They had some ECPW guy on there the other day. I forget who it was, but the dude was wearing a suit. And they're like, I can't believe this guy wrestles in a suit. They're like, he's going out to cut a promo, you asshole. Oh, it's good times.
It's rough. There's few and far between where it's like Ring of Honor, Dragon Gate, PWG, Beyond Wrestling, Full Impact Pro, PWS.
Well, you just riled off like 7 or 8 of them.
Yeah, but then there's a drop off. Nothing against ECPW or ECWA. Some of that stuff is rough, dude. You get your Fallen Angels matches, and those guys are phenomenal. You get your Greek God Papa Don matches. Awesome, but then there's some stuff that's just intolerable. Deal with it.
Okay, fine, but I'm not talking about, like, yeah, there's some good and there's some bad about groups like that. You know the groups I'm talking about, where they have a fucking tarp instead of a canvas for a fucking on the ring, and the fucking ring is made up of, like, pipes that they found in somebody's backyard. and the ropes are like not like legitimate ropes, like fucking garden hoses, fucking clotheslines. I mean, that shit's got to go.
Of course.
If you're wrestling in the backyard, and I'm not advocating backyard wrestling, but if you want to fuck around with your friends, go ahead. You know,
the sprinkler match.
Just don't kill yourself, but don't fucking bullshit yourself by thinking that you have some sort of makeshift ring that, like, you're the fucking next big federation, or you're like number two behind WWE, or number three even behind TNA or Ring of Honor. Because it's just not fucking happening. It's
hey, man,
not.
Humble beginnings are starting.
Humble beginnings, fine. You take a look at the Hardys with their Omega group. Like, that's how they started, but they legit went in with a ring, and they had production, and they did it right. They didn't just fucking put a couple of mattresses on some 2x4s and fucking tie clotheslines around it and said, hey, come to the fucking Wawa parking lot. We're putting on a show in fucking Podunk, Mississippi. Am I wrong?
No, not at all.
Jesus.
I need to apologize to our Podunk, Mississippi listeners.
You think we have a lot of Podunkers?
If we have listeners in Ireland, nothing surprises me.
Podunk, Podunk. What else is going on? Oh, I'm reading the... I might have to... jump on board for a Turnbuckle Throwbacks Bruiser Brody show. I'm reading the Brody book now.
The Crowbar Press one?
I think so.
There's a lot
it's
of
on
Brody
my
books,
it's on my Kindle, so yeah. I don't know. Something that I'm only like 8 chapters in, but something I found interesting.
Okay.
Onita, like 2 years after Brody died, tried to run an angle where Invader stabbed him in the chest.
You know, I think wow. I remember reading that somewhere.
Such a fucking douchebag thing to do.
Yeah, but...
No. There's no but.
He's a promoter, dude. This is what they think, man. Think about the shitty things that Vince McMahon has tried to run with over the years.
Vince McMahon's never tried to drop anyone else from the ceiling.
But Vince McMahon had Jerry Lawler eating fucking Sonic.
Jerry,
when he
look,
came back from his fucking heart attack.
Jerry Lawler easily could have said no. And he easily had a valid reason. I had a heart attack on your TV show.
Yeah, you know what? Jerry Lawler is in that position where he should have been able to say that.
Right.
I mean,
no one held a gun to his fucking head.
It's his fault.
Yeah, but then again, you look at somebody like JR, who's been a company man all these years, and they just fucking, they get rid of him, they hold on to him, and then they fucking just cut him loose completely.
There's... Eventually, the truth will come out about what goes on with him. But
look, yeah.
It's a wacky, weird relationship.
I don't hate Jim Ross. I never put him on that, like, upper tier as a commentator. I just never did.
Really?
I'm not saying that he's, like, Tony Schiavone bad, but
Tony Schiavone was awesome.
Tony Schiavone was awesome in the mid-WCW days.
He was the greatest announcer in the history of this sport.
Yeah, but fucking late WCW fucking just killed anything, any heart that he had left for the business. Dude, it's rough.
It went for everybody.
But go back. Even Heenan was fucking just deflated after that. Not so much his jaw, but, you know, his ego.
So you're trying to tell me... You're trying to justify Onita trying to pull that gimmick off?
I'm not justifying. I'm saying I'm not surprised.
He's just reasoning.
There's no reason.
The man's unreasonable.
Yeah, but then you said, but look at what Vince McMahon does.
Yeah, look at some of the angles he's run over the years. He fucking let Triple H get in a casket with a fucking dead body, pouring fucking SpaghettiOs in his hand, saying he just fucked his fucking brains out. I mean, come on.
Yeah, but... That's Bruiser Brody was an icon in Japan.
I understand.
And he was actually murdered.
Which may be reason why Onita wanted to go that way, because then Onita, if he comes out victorious in the feud, the fans will think, holy shit, Onita got one over for Bruiser Brody. God bless Atsushi Onita.
Yeah, but it never got there because everyone hated it.
I understand, but you're
not... Because it's a terrible idea.
I don't disagree with you on that. I'm just looking at it from a promoter's point of view, and in if you reason it that way, that's fucking dollar signs in his eyes.
He's not trying to justify why he did this. He's just saying this is possibly why he did it.
Yeah.
To make money.
Yeah, and then, dude, I bet you there's a lot of ideas that come out of Vince McMahon's mouth, and somebody just goes, what are you, fucking crazy? And he goes, yeah, you know what? Some of them, he goes, yeah, you know what? Maybe you're right.
Yeah, but it just annoys me that in this business, somebody would try and capitalize off of somebody's murder.
Yeah.
Murder.
Didn't Vince do that by bringing Bret Hart back and that allowed him to kick the shit out of him at WrestleMania?
No.
Well, all right, I know that's a stretch, but still.
That was quite the stretch.
Yeah, what are you going to do? Speaking of stretching, is there anything else before I start yawning and fucking...
No, we're going to wrap this bad boy up. We got I want to get a couple plugs out while we wind down the show.
Sure. First and foremost, don't forget barjitsu.com. That's our good buddies. The Art of American Bar Fighting. It's the book. It's going to be available on Amazon soon. You can pre-order it by going there. You go to their website, it'll take you to Amazon. We got some cool swag, and over the next couple of weeks, we'll be getting some more swag that we're actually going to give away to some of you out there. So make sure you've got your ear on the pulse of professional wrestling and tune into the Shining Wizards for more. Matthew?
First and foremost, I'd like to thank our three guests tonight. First, Mr. Dave.
Turnbuckle Throwbacks Powers.
Dave Mega Powers over here. Thank you for joining us tonight.
The non-sausage-fingered member.
No, my fingers are normal.
Of the Shining, the Shining Wizards Network.
There you go.
Turnbuckle Throwbacks.
Also, yeah. Billy Silverman. You can follow him on Facebook. Look for Billy Silverman. He has two accounts.
Why?
Check him out. Find him because he's a fucking man. Why not? And then Jamin Olivencia, at Jamin Olivencia on Twitter, same name on the Facebook. Follow him, support him. Big things to come with him and Kurt Angle, hopefully. Mr. Angle's going to respond, we would hope.
How do you spell his name, Matt?
Jamin Olivencia.
Oh, you wrote it down. Good boy.
I did. I took notes. That's what I do. You can see him on OVWrestling.com. Check out his matches. Support him. Speaking of matches and supporting people, Beyond Wrestling will be doing their tournament for tomorrow, too, on November 17th. Go to LookMaNoFans.com. Follow them on Twitter at Beyond Wrestling. Tournament for tomorrow, too. They already announced the main event, Eddie Edwards against Biff Busick in a 60-minute Ironman match. And if you know anything about both of these men, then you'll be excited for a 60-minute Ironman match between them. It will be a wrestling clinic.
There's an old song from like the 60s or the 50s. 60-minute man.
I feel like I know that.
60-minute rockin' rollin' all night long.
Also.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, it's okay. Also, ProWrestlingSyndicate.com, October 26th. They will be... they will be returning to Rawway. Just Incredible taking on Bonesaw. Disco Inferno will be there. Sergeant Slaughter.
And that's in order.
Sergeant Slaughter and Starman taking on Cobra Commander.
Cobra Commander. Where else are you going to find that?
And who? The Sheik?
The Sheik, yes.
Yes. So definitely check that out, ProWrestlingSyndicate.com.
Please take the gun away from Eddie in case something goes wrong.
PWS Bombshells are having an open tryout tomorrow night for any females interested in wrestling. ProWrestlingSyndicate.com has all that info. Please check that out, ladies.
I think Overweight Larry's sister is going to try out.
Oh, I hope so.
Oh, hey, guys!
And then, of course, us, the Shining Wizards, at Wizards Podcast on Twitter, ShiningWizards.com, SWN.ShiningWizards.com.
That's the network. We now have, I guess, 9 shows.
Oh my God!
I was gonna put Stickman and Wolfie under the same banner, but I think those two want to keep things separate. So I don't know how often Wolfman's gonna be doing shows. I know periodically when he comes out of his cave, he likes to record something and send it to us. As a matter of fact, I think he sent us a new episode, which I'll probably be posting tomorrow.
It's called The Wild.
Very good.
But we have Apex Radio with the Stickman from Canada. We have Canada representing on the network. We are bilingual, biannual, bianual?
Bicoastal.
By country, by God.
Our brothers to the north?
Yes.
Forever and ever, amen.
Our little brothers. Fucking wow. Can you quack? Quack like a duck.
It wasn't on the microphone.
I don't know. Hopefully something picked that up.
Midnight Jury.
Yeah,
Fallen Angels.
Yeah, we didn't plug Fallen Angels. Who else didn't we plug? 2.5 Wrestlers, Pat Buck, Jay Silva, and Kevin Matthews. Actually, Pat Buck does his own show, so maybe we have 10 shows on the network now.
Pro Wrestling 101 with Justin Credible.
He's got a podcast this week titled Promotion. He's trying to help out some of these promotions with their do's and don'ts and ins and outs. And he actually told us he's been getting a great response from a lot of promotions about that one. So good for him. The revolution will not be televised. It will be right here on your computer, on your iPod, on your iPad, or wherever you want to listen to the Shining Wizards Network.
Your tin can with a string.
We have t-shirts for sale. Pick one up. They're $15 shipped. If you live overseas or somewhere else in the world, they might be a little bit more. Check out the website for details. If you like what you hear, and you know you do, go to iTunes, leave us a rating. Somebody gave us a 3-star rating, I think.
It's okay, as long as they left a rating.
I wish they would have left us a comment. You know? You know, I even if it's just like, oh, you guys suck, you know, I like seeing that shit.
You get off to that, don't you?
Kinda. I like rubbing my putt a little bit.
Dave, take us out of here.
Yes, please.
All right. I got a little song for you guys.
As we celebrate the 28th anniversary of Magnum TA's car
crash. I don't
think
we want to celebrate that.
Oh. Really? Really?
Yeah, really.
Little Michael McDonald.
Oh, there's volumes up top if you want, near the monitor on the right on the screen. See?
Is that a new? That's not the same one, is it? That's the same keyboard, huh? Oh, yeah.
Why are you doing Stevie Wonder?
I thought that was a keyboard cat. I feel like I'm back on the yacht right now.
I wish I had a video camera.
Do you have a phone? Hold on, let me give you my passcode.
Matt's dancing. Jesus, any day now.
Here, make it work.
She rises to her apology. Everybody else can surely know she's watching her go.
Everybody.
What a fool we are.
God, we just killed it. That's it. We lost the
monitor.
Right, Keep my tunes in my ear.
Good night, everybody.
Oh, yeah. Fucking Michael McDonald.
Now I'm hungry.